calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
Ladies and gentlemen, fellow Americans, welcome to the Tom Hartman Show today, originating live from the National Mall in Washington, D.C. I'm subbing for Tom again today. Peter B. Collins ordinarily checks in from San Francisco, but I'm delighted to be here in Washington, live on the scene of Camp Democracy. And we are just under the shadow of the Washington Monument. We've got within our view the nation's Capitol building. The IRS has an office here on Constitution Avenue. And there's a thing called the White House just behind me a couple of blocks here. And sometime during the broadcast today, you'll hear the Marine helicopters flying over us as they land at the White House. I don't know if the president's going to Camp David this weekend or exactly what, but we see a lot of helicopter traffic here. And Camp Democracy is now in day four. And I want to ask you to log on to campdemocracy.org to get full information on the events. This is a place that is building. Each day we see new volunteers coming in. And I want to express to you that Camp Democracy needs you. And if you're listening anywhere in the United States, I want you to conspire with some friends of yours and make plans to jump in the car this weekend, maybe take a bus or a train, maybe organize a group of people from your community to come here and speak out. Because the issues at stake could not be greater. And we talk about these issues, Tom Hartman does on his program and I do on my radio show on a daily basis. But talk isn't enough. You got to walk it too. And there are people here who are dedicated to peace, dedicated to extricating us from the failed policies of the Bush administration on a number of fronts. You don't have to agree with 100% of what people here agree with. The common agenda is that Bush is a failure and that radical Republican rule must be brought under control. I consider it as simple and as complicated as that. We're taking your phone calls here today as usual. The toll-free number is 866-440-TOM. That's 866-440-THOM. All digits, 866-440-8466. Get on the line and we'll include you as we can. We've got a lot of interesting people joining us here today. Coming up in the second hour of the Tom Hartman program, Colonel Sam Gardner is going to visit with us. He's a retired U.S. Air Force colonel who's brought us a lot of solid information on the intentions of the Bush administration toward Iran. And I consider this to be a very significant issue that is, from my point of view, not significantly enough on the radar, particularly of Democrats and progressives. And Sam will be with us next hour. In the third hour of the Tom Hartman program today, Attorney Paul Leto will join us from San Diego, where he has been fighting the fight for fair elections and election integrity. And there's a very important issue at stake there. We'll talk with the attorney about that. Clark Kissinger, who was one of the leaders of the anti-war movement in the Vietnam era, is also going to join us in the third hour. And he has helped organize the Commission on Crimes Against Humanity, which I think is an important precursor to accountability for the Bush administration. And also on today's program, Melanie Sloan from CREW, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. They have taken over management of the civil suit filed by Ambassador Joe Wilson and his wife, Valerie Plame Wilson, against various members of the Bush administration. We'll get an update on that from Melanie Sloan. That, plus people from Camp Democracy, many more who I haven't mentioned, will be joining us. And as I said, your calls and comments are welcome at 866-440-THOM. Joining me here live at Camp Democracy is Jeff Millard. He was in the Army for 8 years, rose to the rank of sergeant, served 13 months in Iraq, mostly in Tikrit. Welcome to the program, Jeff.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you. And you're one of the co-founders of Iraq Veterans Against the War. Also with us by telephone is Kevin Zeese, a co-founder of the organization. Kevin, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's a lovely day out here on the Mall. The only thing that's missing is hordes and hordes of Americans. And that's one thing I want to try to fix over the next 3 hours on this program.
It's great you're doing that, by the way. I think that you're right. This does deserve a lot of attention. It's an excellent effort by David Swanson and others, and I hope people do come down to Washington and visit it. There's a lot of good people speaking at it.
Indeed. Now, Jeff Millard, tell us about Iraq Vets Against the War.
Okay, well, first of all, I'm actually not a co-founder. Iraq Veterans Against the War was doing a lot of good work while I was still in Iraq. I was in Iraq from October of 2004 until October of 2005, and while I was still in Iraq, Iraq Veterans Against the War was doing a lot of really good work, to include the Fayetteville March last year and things of that nature. But Iraq Veterans Against the War is a organization, actually, I believe at this point we are the second largest Iraq and Afghanistan veterans organization in the entire country. And right now we have three demands, and we're based on these three demands. And the first is to bring all troops home now. The second is to support them when they come back, which means a fully funded VA system. And the third is to make sure that we pay reparations to the Iraqi people, because we feel that we are financially and economically indebted to them for destroying their country in an illegal and immoral war.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jeff, you're sporting a cane, and you describe yourself as a cripple. What injury did you sustain in Iraq?
Well, I was actually injured initially training to go over to Iraq, and they said, oh, it's just a sprain, there's nothing wrong with you, and the doctors cleared me to go over. I went to Iraq and pretty much shredded my left knee. I have three torn ligaments, a torn tendon, and two torn tendons and torn cartilage in my left knee, bursitis in both of my hips. I have degenerative bone disease in two of the vertebrae of my spine. I have lung damage. I have hearing damage. I have eyesight damage. And I may have soft tissue brain damage, but I won't know about that because Congress just cut funding to the study that was going to find out if a lot of the veterans' troubles that we're having with things like memory, processing words through our head, is due to soft tissue brain damage sustained in Iraq. But we won't know that now because our Congress cut the funding for that study. And that's part of why we come out here for things like Camp Democracy, because it's not just the Bush administration that needs to be held accountable. It's this Congress that has given a complete and utter blank check to this president to do whatever he wants.
But, Jeff, they support the troops.
Yeah, they support the troops until we come home.
And they hammer John Kerry because he thought about voting against the $87 billion extension of funding for Iraq.
Well, the problem with John Kerry was that he didn't stick to what he needed to stick to, and he should have just, you know, if John Kerry would have come out and said, I'm against the war and I want to bring the troops home, we'd be calling him President Kerry today.
Well, he did. Unfortunately, he didn't do it until June of 2006.
Right, and the fact of the matter is, yeah, he didn't do that. And had he done that while he was running against George W. Bush, he would have, I believe, beat him in a landslide. But the fact of the matter is not even progressives wanted to vote for a guy who said he wanted to increase troop levels. And I can't understand why politicians continuously believe that they have to move to what's called the center in this country, when the neocons have driven the center of this country so far right that in any other country they'd be looked at as fascists.
Very well put. Kevin Zeese, tell us about your service in Iraq.
Yeah, well, I've been in Iraq, but I run a national anti-war group called Democracy Rising, and I'm a co-founder of Voters for Peace, votersforpeace.org. And I wanted to echo what was just said. I think that if John Kerry had taken a hard line and said, I'm opposed to this war, he would be President Kerry by now. I think that was a gigantic error. And more importantly, it was an error by the anti-war movement not to demand that of him.
Yeah.
I think we made it too easy for John Kerry to get the vote of the anti-war voter, even though all he was saying during the campaign was, I want to manage the war better. That's not good enough. We didn't want a manager of an illegal war. We wanted a leader who would end the illegal war. And so I think the Voters for Peace is a particularly important project. I'd urge you to check out the votersforpeace.org website and sign the Voters Pledge, which says, I will only vote for peace candidates. So I'd urge people to go to votersforpeace.org. They're also a co-sponsor of Camp Democracy, as is my group, Democracy Rising. Democracy Rising is a group that focuses on Congress. We want to see Congress change its view and have a spine on this issue. And we're pushing Congress. We're 100 votes away at the last vote, which was almost a year ago, the Woolsey Amendment, 100 votes away from passing Congress saying yes to an exit strategy. I imagine it's even closer now. And if the voters have spine and vote for only pro-peace candidates, even if it means Republicans win, we've got to tell Democrats, you're going to lose till you stand for something. And even if it means Republicans win, vote for peace. And that will then get the Democrats to have some spine. It will convince the Republicans who are wavering to go against the Bush administration. And we will have a majority in Congress that says we will only vote to end the war, to bring the troops home responsibly. We will not vote another penny for stay the course of an illegal war. That's what the anti-war movement needs to be, the movement that stands up and says this is a life and death issue. It requires urgency. It should be the premier issue on which we vote in this November election.
Well, I agree, and the Democratic Party is inching in that direction, but I also agree with you, Kevin, that the voters should not let their vote be taken for granted. It's
exactly.
Got to be earned, and you have to hold people accountable, including, we saw it in Connecticut. I supported Ned Lamont, and I supported people who decided that Joe Lieberman had to go. And we've got to make tough calls like that, stick to our, I don't want to use the term guns, stick to our votes.
Conviction.
Stick to our votes.
Yep. And make sure that we are not taken advantage of or taken for granted. Gentlemen, stay with us. We'll continue. Kevin Zeese and Jeff Millard, Iraq Veterans Against the War. I'm Peter B. Collins, live from Camp Democracy, here on the Tom Hartman Program.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
This is the Tom Hartman radio program, originating live from Camp Democracy on the National Mall in Washington, D.C. I'm delighted to be here. I'm Peter B. Collins from San Francisco. If you want to know more about me, I got a website. They named it after me, peterbcollins.com, and you can drop me an email there. I'd be delighted to hear from you. Tom Hartman has the day off. It's a rarity for him, but he is working to promote his newest book. I believe it's number 19 for Tom. It's called Screwed. Love the title. The Undeclared War Against the Middle Class and What We Can Do About It. It's out in hardcover from Barrett Kohler Press. And Tom was at an event in New York last night, he told me, with Mark Crispin Miller, who teaches history at NYU, is very active on the web on many fronts. And they went to an event for World Can't Wait. It's coming up in October. And this is another opportunity for you to speak out against the excesses of the current regime in Washington. And why don't you Google World Can't Wait, and you'll get full information on that. And it comes with a strong recommendation from Tom Hartman. We're here at Camp Democracy with Jeff Millard, and Kevin Zeese is on the phone with us. They are with Iraq Vets Against the War. And, gentlemen, we got some callers for you. Let's go to Bob in Fox Island, Washington. Hello, Bob. You're on the air on the Tom Hartman program. Bob, we're trying to pick you up here, Bob. Let's see. Bob, do we hear you? Yeah, go ahead.
Hey, is this Peter B.?
Yes, it is, Bob. How are you?
Hey, it's wonderful. I appreciate so much what you guys do. I really appreciate you and Tom, not only because of what you stand for, but because of the fact that you play our music. Wake up, America. You don't stay the course on a horse and going the wrong way. And Lady Liberty. What I'm calling about is, I believe, really the greatest threat to this country is this administration and a Republican Congress that has little regard for life, liberty, truth, justice, common sense, or common good, and they're only pro-life until birth, my friend, and they don't care about what happens after that. And the only other thing I'd like to say is it's time for Harry Reid to stand up in Congress again, shut it down, and say the American people deserve the truth about 9/11, because, you know, he stood up and they said, oh, yeah, we promise, we'll get on that, and they never have. And then they're released.
Well, and Bob, you are correct, because just this week, once again, Pat Roberts, chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee, has blocked the full release of the intelligence investigation into the misuse of intel prior to our invasion of Iraq. And this has pushed it past yet another election, and that's not an accident. You know, we have seen every effort by the Republicans is to push any kind of bad news past the next election or into the next century if they possibly can, and they succeed far too often.
That's what I'm saying, that they have to stand up and they have to say, we want the truth. The American people deserve the truth. You know, they did this with Watergate. They did this with Nixon, if you remember, okay, prior to his impending impeachment. And they did this. And they need to stand up and say, we're going to shut it down until you release it. The people deserve the truth. They deserve to hear it on the real news. I'm just tired of the propaganda. Like this thing, they can make a movie. They can spend millions of dollars on making a movie that's filled with lies that's going to be released to the public. They're not going to really be able to discern what is true and what isn't, and they know that. And even if they disclaim it, they're going to watch it and believe it. And they're willing to put the propaganda out on Sunday and Monday, and they're willing to do all that, but they're not willing to follow up on the promises that they made, and they need to just shut it down. You know,
Bob, hold on. Let's get a comment from Jeff. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think that it's really important to note here that the Republican Congress and the Republican administration aren't the only ones here to blame. The fact of the matter is that they were put into power largely by the American people. I mean, yes, we made the election close enough for them to steal. We can't do that. We can't make these elections even close enough for them to have the possibility of stealing them. We have to come to places like Camp Democracy. We have to take over Senate buildings, and we have to take charge of our own Senate. As I recall, this is a government of the people, for the people, and await by the people, and that's the thing that the people have seemed to neglected.
Mm-hmm.
And I look around here at the mall, and I see a lot of activists, but I'm not seeing the average Americans that need to come here. I mean, tomorrow morning at 9:30 at First and Independence Southwest here in Washington, D.C., we're going to have a March of Veterans sponsored by Veterans for Peace and Iraq Veterans Against the War, and we're going to walk clear around the Capitol and demand that our Congress people start taking care of our veterans and that they bring our troops home immediately. The fact of the matter is that it's us. It's our responsibility to do this. That's why places like Camp Democracy are so important, is because we're actually taking charge of these things. We're actually going to do these things. Down here on the National Mall, we can see the Washington Monument. We've got the White House in the background. We can see the Capitol. This is the place where we take back our democracy. That's so important. It's clear in the name of Camp Democracy, and that's what we need to do, is take back our democracy.
Bob, thanks a lot for your call today, and keep making that powerful and political message music. We really appreciate it.
Well,
Kevin,
so
the president asserts that while there's still a little work to be done, that we are safer because of his policies. We only have about 30 seconds before the break here. How do you respond to that?
I think he's wrong. In fact, there's a State Department report, a CIA report, and a Department of Defense report that all show that we are actually creating more terrorists than we are destroying. We have a foreign policy that seems to be bent on creating terrorists and creating enemies of the United States faster than we kill them, because we're taking this approach of militarism. We should be opening up dialogue and negotiation with Iran and Syria rather than threatening shock and awe. Threatening shock and awe is just going to make things worse and continue to build us into a regional instability and actually move us toward, sadly, I think, a world war. And that's where we're going. And so
I also think the policies have heightened the impact and visibility of people like Osama bin Laden.
No question.
He's played into their hands.
We've got to
take a break. Kevin, hold on, Kevin. We've got to take a break. Jeff Millard and Kevin Zeese with us, Iraq Veterans Against the War from Camp Democracy in Washington.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
I'm the decider, and I decide what is best. I'm the decider.
I figured that it couldn't be too difficult.
So I hear
yes, we're fighting for truth and democracy right here at the scene of the crime. We're at Camp Democracy in Washington, D.C., and the crime scene is right behind me over there. I can see the roof of the White House from here at Camp Democracy. We are on Constitution Avenue on the National Mall, between 14th and 15th Streets here in Washington, D.C. The Washington Monument is a great navigation tool for you. It's right off to my right-hand side. And as I survey the five large tents set up here, there are vendor booths with the Iraq Veterans Against the War. Jeff Millard and Kevin Zeese are with us on the program right now. Vietnam Vets Against the War. We have the Crawford Peace Center, Delaware Valley Veterans for America, and there are various workshops here that are scheduled all the way through the 21st of September. You can get full information on the web at campdemocracy.org. And I want to stress that you are needed here. You. And I'm talking to you, not, do a Three Stooges on me and point to Mo and Curly. I'm talking to you. If you listen to this program, I have a pretty good hunch of what your values are. And you need to come to Washington and express yourself, because it's very important to show the people here that Americans are not going to remain complacent and just go shopping and hope that the wars pass over and don't have any effect on them. Jeff Millard, you've been doing a lot of writing for truthout.org, and I appreciate the voice that you bring. What kind of reaction do you get to the stories that you have written for Truth Out?
Well, the bulk of what I do for Truthout is actually in the multimedia section, though I do some writing. I don't really consider myself a writer. But the reaction that I'm getting throughout the country usually is people stop me at the most random places, bus stops, you know, subway stations, the hot dog vendor on the corner, and say, "Oh, I saw your piece on Truthout. It was really great." Mm-hmm. I've never had anyone actually stop me and say, "Oh, I saw that piece on Truthout. I hate you. Go away." You know, it's always really, really positive. And I'm always shocked at how large the viewership is for Truthout, because it's really random places that I go. You know, the middle of Iowa, I have people stop me and say, "Hey, I saw that piece you did on Truthout. It was great."
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really been a wonderfully positive reaction to it. I've been doing it since Truthout put one of my speeches up in Easter, and I've been doing work for them. Mm-hmm. Since just shortly after there. So it's been a really positive thing.
Yeah. Kevin Zeese, tell us a little bit about Iraq Vets Against the War, and how can people get involved? Do you actively recruit returning service members, or they just contact you?
Well, Iraq Vets Against the War is not my group, but I can tell you they are a great group.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And people should get involved with that. They do actively recruit, and people can go to the website and join. The group I work with is democracyrising.us, which is a group that's trying to focus on Congress to try to change the views in Congress, and we also highlight the work of local groups. So we've actually interviewed people from Iraq Vets Against the War. We had Cindy Sheehan, actually, on our website before she was Cindy Sheehan, when she was just a gold star mom who had not yet become famous. So we try to find people who are doing good work in the field, and we draw attention to what they stand for. Today we put up an interview with Deborah Sweet, who's the national coordinator of World Can't Wait, which is going to have a big event on October 5th in Washington, mm-hmm. D.C. So I hope you will come to the website, read about her. She's an interesting character, by the way. When she was a teenager, she was given an award by President Nixon during the Vietnam War, and she used that as an opportunity to say to President Nixon, "You are killing millions of people in Southeast Asia." And that got national media attention. She was there getting an award for excellence as a youth, and she stood up and told the truth to power, and she's still doing that today through World Can't Wait. So people should check her out on democracyrising.us and read about her and see what she stands for. See what she's doing today to try to spark a real effort to remove Bush from office. And so check it out.
And Jeff, I'll toss that question to you about IVAW. How do people get involved?
Yeah, I am a member of Iraq Veterans Against the War, and I'm a very active member. I do this full time. And we have a number of different outreach programs. When I was just down at Camp Casey in Crawford, Texas with Cindy, we were going every day to Fort Hood or near every day to Fort Hood, handing out pamphlets for the GI Rights Hotline. We were doing a number of things in regards to that. We also have been doing a lot of outreach to active duty military, to guard units. And one of the things are New York City guard units, and they just simply say, "These are the issues we're hearing that want to be raised by combat veterans." You flip it over and it says, "These are the issues that Iraq Veterans Against the War are working on." And they're the same thing, and that's realistically what we're doing. Iraq Veterans Against the War is working on the issues that combat veterans want, which is bringing the troops home, taking care of them when they get home. I mean, one of the big things in taking care of them when they get home, we've got a case right now pending with Suzanne Swift, and one of the things that Iraq Veterans Against the War is doing is we are supporting veterans. We're supporting even ones who are not members of Iraq Veterans Against the War, like Suzanne Swift, who's not actually a member of Iraq Veterans Against the War, although she has gotten back from the war while
she was
there.
And tell us what happened.
Well, while Suzanne was in Iraq for her year in Iraq, she was by three men in her chain of command, was sexually harassed, sexually assaulted, and command raped by all three of them throughout her full year tour in Iraq. When she got home, she complained of it. They put her back in that same unit with them. Out of fear for her life, she went AWOL. She went to her home. They broke into her house. They came and got her. They dragged her back to the base, and they now have her at Fort Lewis imprisoned as though she were the criminal. The members of her unit that committed these crimes against her have not been investigated. They are walking free. There's more details at SuzanneSwift.org, but what Iraq Veterans Against the War is going to be doing this week is on Tuesday, Iraq Veterans Against the War with Veterans for Peace and some local voters from Oregon, which is where she's from the Portland area, are going to be going to Peter DeFazio's office. We're going to have a letter of demands demanding that he contact the chain of command of Suzanne Swift and demand a congressional investigation as to why she's facing a dishonorable discharge, and the men who perpetrated a rape against her, who are in her command, do nothing but continue their jobs on a daily basis. This is something that is a complete outrage to every person that has ever worn a uniform, has ever performed a military duty with honor, and every man in this country should be deeply troubled and upset about this. This isn't just a woman's issue, this is a man's issue. This is a man's issue because it's men who are perpetrating these crimes, and we need to take accountability for that. And so we're going to be going to Peter DeFazio's office on Tuesday, and if he refuses to begin a congressional investigation into this, we're not leaving his office until he does it. And if it takes the cops dragging a bunch of Iraq war veterans out of there, well, that's what they're going to do. But the fact of the matter is that we are prepared to make sure that Suzanne Swift's case is heard by this entire country, whatever we have to do that.
That's Jeff Millard. Also with us is Kevin Zeese. He's with Voters for Peace and Executive Director of Democracy Rising. Jeff Millard from Iraq Veterans Against the War. And if you'd like to join us by telephone, please do. Lines are open for you toll-free at 866-440-THOM, 866-440-8466. And Craig joins us from Linwood, Washington. Hello, Craig. You're on the air. Hi, Craig. Go right ahead.
Hello. Yes, I was just trying to look up on Google. I didn't have time. But I was talking to my counselor yesterday, and she told me she was reading in a British newspaper that right now there's like 20,000 U.S. soldiers who are filing for asylum in Canada to prevent themselves from having to go to this illegal war.
Mm-hmm. 20,000 seems high.
Well, yeah, that's actually would be an extremely high number. I doubt it's very that high at all. I actually lived in Toronto and organized the Toronto chapter of Iraq Veterans Against the War and worked very closely to war resistors who've left the military and gone to Canada. And we actually estimate there's about 200 of them. Only about 20 of them are actually living publicly and above ground. The rest are living underground with the help of the Canadian people. Their story can easily be read at www.resistors.ca.
There's also a new book out by a colleague of mine named Peter Laufer, L-A-U-F-E-R, called Mission Rejected, and he profiles a number of Americans who have honorably refused service.
Yeah, I think all of those are members of Iraq Veterans Against the War who are in that book. A number of them are living in Canada. Some of them are living in the States. Some of them have served prison time.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Mission Rejected is a wonderful firsthand account of GIs who have refused service, and the title is just perfectly apt in that, you know, we have rejected this mission outright. There's a continuing and growing GI movement against the Iraq war, and that's what we're going to see continuously build. When we were down in Killeen, which is just outside of Fort Hood, Texas, we were handing out these GI rights hotline numbers, and we got reports back from the GI rights hotline that they had a huge flood of calls and really weren't sure what to do with all these calls that they got. So, I mean, GIs want to resist. They want to do something. They know this war's wrong. They don't want to go back over, and they just need to know what they can do, which is why Iraq Veterans Against the War is helping to organize active duty GIs to refuse this war.
All right, thank you for the... Okay, Craig, go.
How many more Aaron Wataddas are there out there that are just waiting to see what happens, to see how much of a court-martial he gets?
Well, there's actually a lot of people like Aaron Watada. I mean, you have Mark Wilkerson, who just turned himself in. I did a story about Mark on Truth Out. You've got a number of them throughout the country. There's actually about 40,000 who have gone AWOL and deserted throughout this war, according to the Department of Defense. Another 25,000 National Guard and Reservists who've refused to show up for duty. So, I mean, the resistance to this war is very large. It's just a matter of, it's a lot easier generally for people to do this not publicly, which is why people like Mark Wilkerson and people like Lieutenant Watada and Patrick Hart living in Canada, who are doing all these things very publicly, are very courageous, and they do enable others to do these things. And it's going to be a very big thing, whether
well,
the media pays attention
for
to it or
patriots.
Not.
Wait, one quick point. There's also been surveys done of military officials, both of private service by Zogby and by some military magazines. There's a lot of disrespect of the leadership, especially the commander-in-chief and Donald Rumsfeld. People in the military are not happy with the direction this country's going.
Kevin Zeese of Voters for Peace and Democracy Rising, thanks for joining
us.
Nice to
much.
Talk with you. Jeff Millard, thanks for being here. I'm Peter B. Collins, live from Camp Democracy on the Tom Hartman Program. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. It is the Tom Hartman Program, live from Camp Democracy in Washington, D.C. I'm Peter B. Collins, your humble host, sitting in for Tom today. And we're live from Camp Democracy. It's exciting. Every day I see more people coming here, signing up, volunteering, getting involved in sending a powerful message just a couple of blocks over here to the White House. And joining me now is Carrie Biggs Adams. She's a 30-year union member, an Emmy Award-winning television engineer, and she's also with the Newspaper Guild here in Washington. And she is decked out in pink because she's one of those Code Pink for Peace gals. Hello, Carrie.
Hello, Peter.
Thanks for joining us.
Yes, I really am one of those Code Pink gals, right down to my bright pink fingernail.
And there's less of you than there was on July 4th.
Oh, there certainly is. There's 44 pounds less of me because I've just been having fruit juice and water since then. I'm participating in that troop home fast.
Yeah. Well, and I'm glad to see you in the pink of health because we know that the fast has been very hard for Cindy Sheehan, and we send her all of our best wishes.
Absolutely.
And I hope she regains full health and vigor very soon and can join us here at Camp Democracy.
Hope so.
What's it like 67 days into a fast? I have to say that that's something I've never achieved.
Well, you know, it's food is a headspace. You know, you decide to eat, and absolutely you do need nutrition, and I do take my vitamins, but I'm keeping up with my fruit juice. I don't let myself get too hungry, and I am drinking a lot of water.
Yeah, yeah. What's the message you want people to take away from Camp Democracy?
I think we need to understand that there are so many aspects of what's wrong with the administration. I come from the labor movement. I clearly work a lot with the peace movement. But we have a lot of things going on in our country where democracy is disappearing, be it the immigrants that were the focus of yesterday or the electoral politics. We have so many different places that we need to be looking at, that we need to take back control of our country.
And the media is a key part of the problem.
It is a key part of the problem, and of course that is what I do every day because I represent people who are journalists, both in radio, television, and newspapers and news magazines, trying to get them economic justice and collective bargaining rights and bargaining contracts.
Mm-hmm. So what is the tenor, and I understand the membership of the Newspaper Guild involves mostly journalists who want to maintain, their objectivity, but they have to know that the news product that they are generating really falls short of what we need in a vibrant democracy. And the stenography that many people refer to as passing for journalism today is hurting all of us.
It really is hurting all of us. And so I work very hard at making sure that journalists have the right to speak out, to feel that they can say what needs to be said, to present the information that has to happen, because when they are intimidated into not telling the truth and not presenting that message, then we are all the poorer for it, and mm-hmm. that's where we sit. So whether it's a corporation that really terrifies you that they're going to fire you if you write that or say that, or worse yet, when it's sort of implied, and, it's not illegal to just imply it.
Right, yeah. Let's take a call. It's Alice on the line. Is this Alice in Humboldt, California? Let's see. Hello, Alice?
Hello.
I thought so. Hi, Alice. How are you today?
Well, I'm feeling my age today. I wish I could have been with you on this big meeting. But
you're here in spirit, Alice.
Pardon?
You are here in spirit at Camp Democracy, and I can feel it.
Oh, I sure am.
And tell our listeners about your path to advocacy. You used to just be a talk show listener, right?
No.
Can you hear me there? Okay, Alice?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, tell people how you got involved in activism.
Well, my good neighbor, Dave Goggin, is the one that got me into it.
It's Dave's fault.
Well, no. I'm so glad he did. Because I've enjoyed it, and I love my country. And I've never seen it in such bad shape
now. You've been watching this country for over 90 years now.
Oh, yeah, 92, almost 93.
Yeah.
But I know that you're doing everything you can. I just wish there was some magic. But I'm holding you in a good thought.
All right, Alice. Thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Up next, Jim is on the line. Hello, Jim. Welcome to the Tom Hartman program. This is Peter B. Collins.
Hi, Pete. First of all, I want to say we had a tremendous Labor Day parade in the city of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Oh, great.
Thousands of workers, union workers, march and thousands watched. But the thing I'm calling about, I'd like to know why there's nothing being done about these contractors down in Louisiana that aren't paying their employees. It was on the news that employees are not getting paid for the work that they're doing. And this is all government money that's going to Halliburton, all the subcontractors down there.
Right.
And what's coming up on this?
We talked with a woman named Carolina last night on my radio program, and she's been active in New Orleans. And there are just far too many cases of workers who went there to try to help with the reconstruction. They're being exploited, exposed to mold and other problems without proper gloves or protective care in the work that they do. And to top it off, many of them will work for several weeks on the promise of a paycheck, and then they just say, we're not going to pay you.
Yeah, but in the meantime, these companies have billions of dollars, and they're unaccounted for.
Yeah, well, we're going to have to hold them accountable, and it's something we're working on. Jim, thank you for the call from Pittsburgh today.
Okay,
and Carrie Biggs Adams, thanks for stopping by. Thank you for the peach you brought me.
Absolutely. That's an impeach.
An impeach. I get it. We're live from Camp Democracy. Coming up, more activity here from the scene in Washington, D.C. And after the news, we'll be joined by Colonel Sam Gardner, who retired from the Air Force and brings us a lot of good information on the Bush administration's intentions toward Iran. Live from Washington on the Tom Hartman program, this is Peter B. Collins.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Live from Washington, D.C., it's the Tom Hartman radio program. I'm Peter B. Collins, sitting in for Tom today, and we're here at the site of Camp Democracy, hard by the Washington Monument. And I want to remind you that the Tom Hartman program is heard coast to coast on great radio stations. You can also log on to radiopower.org to listen. Programs are archived at whiterosesociety.org. And we are sponsored by Sacred Grounds Coffee, saving the planet one cup at a time. Call 1-800-425-2532 or log on to sacredgroundscoffee.com. We're also brought to you by Small Dog Electronics. Get the latest iPod now. Call 1-800-511-MAX. 1-800-511-MACS, or go to smalldog.com on the web. And while I'm here in Washington, D.C., I would be remiss if I didn't acknowledge Benny. Benny is my personal minder at the National Security Agency, and this poor sap has been tasked to monitor the Peter B. Collins Show on a daily basis. And Benny, while I'm here, if I can buy a drink, a cocktail, or maybe even a gallon of rosé, just stop by Camp Democracy. I would love to meet you, and you could monitor me in person if you'd like to, Benny. Joining us right now is Laurie Arbiter from The Critical Voice. And, Laurie, tell us about that T-shirt you're sporting.
Hi there.
Hi.
We at The Critical Voice started a campaign based on a statement, "We will not be silent."
Mm-hmm.
And that statement dates back to the student resistance movement, the White Rose, which is a movement from Nazi Germany. And they sent out leaflets into the German population and trying to have an uprising in Germany against Hitler. And one of their leaflets they signed, "We will not be silent."
Mm-hmm.
We took it from the German language and translated it into Arabic, Farsi, English, and Spanish. And we've been working since the third anniversary of the war in Iraq, when we launched the campaign to get as many people to join us in wearing these T-shirts. So
now, some people have worn them and gotten into trouble. Tell us about that.
There was an incident with a man named Raed Jarar, who I know because I met him here in D.C. a few months back and gave him his T-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
He was flying from New York on JetBlue back to his home in California, and he was waiting at the gate after passing through two security checkpoints and having his breakfast. When he was approached by security there, he was wearing the Arabic language T-shirt, which has a little translation underneath in English that says, "We will not be silent."
Right, for those who are Arabic impaired.
Yes, and these two officers apparently are impaired in that language knowledge. So they approached him and they told him he could not fly on the plane unless he covered his T-shirt.
Oh, wow.
He resisted because he did bring to light to them, because they didn't seem to know, that the Constitution actually covers flying.
Sure, it protects corporate logos that people wear on their shirts, too.
Free speech. They said that in America, people don't really understand that. That was what they actually said to him. He was forced to make a choice, and he had to cover his T-shirt with a shirt that they bought for him.
And what did it say? I love Bush?
Actually, they offered him an they wanted to get him an I Love New York T-shirt. And the security said to the JetBlue personnel, don't make him go that far. That's the other extreme. To which he said he does like New York, and he was being racially profiled all the way through.
Laurie, I appreciate your activism on a T-shirt. I think it's terrific. And people can get more, and can they order a T-shirt on the web?
They can now, yes.
At thecriticalvoice.org.
That's correct, yes.
All right.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Laurie, and thank you for your giant contribution.
Thank you so much.
Really appreciate it. That's Laurie Arbiter. We're here on the Tom Hartman program, and if you have a question or comment you'd like to join us, lines are open toll-free at 866-440-THOM. That's 866-440-TOM. And we would love to hear from you. Joining us now is a man who I have just met for the first time here in person, but we've talked many times on the radio, over the telephone, over the past 3 or 4 years. He is Colonel Sam Gardner, retired from the United States Air Force. He has been an instructor at the Air College, the Naval War College, the Army War College, and he has been supplying us with a lot of fascinating information about developments between the United States and Iran. Colonel Gardner, welcome to the program. Welcome to Camp Democracy.
PB, good to see you.
Nice to see you. So this week the president's been on a rhetorical offensive, and I find many of the things that he's been rhetoricizing about quite offensive. I don't think rhetoricizing is a word, and I apologize.
It's a good word in Washington.
And many people think that he is focused on the November elections, trying to rally the Republican base that supported the war in Iraq, that generally supports the so-called global war on terror. And many of us believe he has miscalculated, that he's playing this card too many times. But there's an alternate scenario.
Yes.
That this is not about the election, that the president doesn't really care what happens. He's a lame duck and he knows it. And he is hell-bent on bringing Iran to heel, using military power if necessary. You think that the speeches we're hearing are more about the future conflict with Iran than the present conflict with Iraq and al-Qaeda?
Certainly the evidence would sort of point in that direction. I'm told by many press sources that have connections around the White House that he actually is not particularly concerned about the elections. There are a bunch of things that are motivating him right now, his place in history, not public opinion, as he tells us all the time. He doesn't really care about that. He doesn't care about congressional opinion. He doesn't care about world opinion. But he sees himself, and he actually uses these words as if he were Churchill. And when he says that...
That makes me Chamberlain, doesn't it?
Well, you see, the interesting thing about Churchill was not the Battle of Gallipoli, which Churchill's mistake is bad as Iraq, but it is his notion that he won't be appreciated till after he leaves.
Right.
That's why it's not important to worry about public opinion. If one were believing, as I sort of more and more do, that we've already decided to go after Iran militarily, you can look at these speeches that have occurred over the last week through that lens.
Mm-hmm.
And they're in there. He makes the argument, Iran, Islamic fascism, terrorism,
weapons,
the whole thing, Al-Qaeda.
Right.
It's very interesting. That keeps pushing its head in there. Iran, Hezbollah, Iran, Al-Qaeda, Hitler. He keeps making these things. And actually, it's a very effective technique of propaganda, which is you make these points that people will connect in their minds. And, you know, he really knows how to connect with probably about 60% of the population.
Yeah, it's using metaphor. And
right.
George Lakoff's been on our program many times, the linguist from UC Berkeley. And he describes it that way, that these are metaphors that don't have to be accurate to be effective.
Yes, yes. So the hypothesis could very well be that we are setting the stage for a coming attack on Iran. And we know from press sources that a plan is already at the White House.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's different from a plan being written by the Pentagon. The White House has called the plan there, which means that the president and the vice president are probably talking about it. We know that the Joint Chiefs of Staff have gone to the White House and objected, which is a very big story that people have missed.
Mm-hmm.
Very concerned. You and I have talked about this. When
right.
the Joint Chiefs worrying, the military is worrying about a plan that the president seems to have in mind, it's a very serious thing.
And what about Europe? What's Europe's reaction?
Well, there's a very interesting thing happened in the last 2 days. The Prime Minister of Germany, the Foreign Minister of France, the Foreign Minister of Russia, and the Chinese Foreign Minister, all within the last 2 days, have given speeches in which they have said, well, we don't think we ought to use the military option. Now, this is very interesting that they would all come out simultaneously
mm-hmm.
and talk about a non-event.
Right.
I've sent that around to some former CIA friends who say that's an indicator that they probably have something in their intelligence that suggests the United States is moving down that path, and they want to block it before it takes place.
Mm-hmm. And does Bush listen to European leaders?
I don't think he cares about them either.
It does seem that Rice is concerned about that, the Secretary of State.
Sure.
And at least according to the Washington Post today, she appears to have been a pivotal player in the shift on Guantanamo. Of course, it came with another Bush poke in the eye, which we can talk about in the next segment.
Sure.
Sam, we'll continue after a break here. We're talking with Colonel Sam Gardner, retired from the U.S. Air Force. He's with us live at Camp Democracy in Washington, D.C. And if you'd like to call in, I'd like to hear from you. Here on the Tom Hartman Program, it's 866-440-8466. That's 866-440-THOM. And you can send me an email, peter@peterbcollins.com. I'd love your feedback if you're listening to the program today. And I'd also love to hear you pledge to support Camp Democracy. Most importantly, with your body. Bring it here to Washington, D.C. and speak truth to power. I'm Peter B. Collins on the Tom Hartman Program, live from D.C. today.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
The Tom Hartman Program continues live from the National Mall in Washington, D.C. There goes another airliner flying into National Airport. I know they named it after a former president, but I just can't bring myself to say it. We're just under the shadow of the Washington Monument here on Constitution Avenue. It's Camp Democracy on the web at campdemocracy.org. I urge you to log on, and more importantly, I urge you to come here in person. We need to show the strength of those who oppose this administration, and particularly oppose the wars to date. And I think it's important to express our opposition to wars yet to come. We're talking with Colonel Sam Gardner, and he's been helping us understand some of the thinking of the Bush administration and some of the planning, plotting, and scheming that we strongly think could lead to military action against Iran. And Sam Gardner, a couple of things that have just surfaced in the last week. A week ago today, the president offered a rosy assessment in one of these speeches on his current positivity tour. And the very same day, the Pentagon issued a very dark, dire report about the situation in Iraq. Washington Post reports today that they fudged the statistics about the number of dead Iraqis, and Iraq has so many dead people in Baghdad, they have to add two more morgues to handle the daily flow of dead bodies. Then we had the Gitmo turnabout, where the president has begrudgingly adopted advice, we think, from Secretary Rice to get in compliance with the Geneva Conventions and Article 3 in particular. And he did it with a flourish, announcing that 14 of the baddest of the baddest of the bad guys that hate America have been transferred from the prisons that he previously denied the existence of in Europe and Asia to Guantanamo Bay. So while he is responding to the demands of the Supreme Court, he's also offering a poke in the eye, which is legislation that essentially says that we can torture if we want to. And that, of course, follows his explicit denunciation or disclaimer that he, you know, we do not torture. You have an addition, which is generals in Afghanistan have said there are serious problems there and we need more troops. And that's not on the talking points of George W. Bush right now.
No, it's a very interesting trend. What you didn't include in that list was that at the same time the president was giving his speech, the four leading military lawyers of the military services were testifying before the Senate against the president's proposal. Whoa! That is a very important thing happening. And then yesterday on CNN, in uniform, was a Navy lawyer who is the lawyer for this the guy who had the trial that went to the Supreme Court, saying, you know, that the proposal is bad, it's not true justice. That is a very significant thing.
And Lindsey Graham, the senator who essentially wrote the bill that legalized the illegal detentions at Guantanamo, is saying that he can't stand for the Bush proposal.
Right, and he is a military lawyer, has been for 20 years. Now, it's a very interesting thing. And then before the break, you and I were talking about the Pentagon's resistance over the Iran plan. These things are beginning to accumulate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that going to change the White House? I doubt it.
Yeah.
All it does is, I think it's more reason why we ought to be concerned.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to calls. Will in Lansing, Michigan, thanks for holding. You're on the Tom Hartman program with Peter B. and Sam Gardner.
Thank you very much for taking my call, Peter. Sam, I had one question for you on if the U.N. decides not to set tariffs on refining oil to Iran or not to use any kind of a military offense in Iran, what should the UN do and the Security Council do about Iran and those threats? And one thing I'm just satisfied with calling President Bush a deceiver or a liar about Iraq. I'm not completely sold on that, because President Clinton said himself that without a strong inspection program, Iraq would retain and begin to rebuild its chemical and biological and nuclear weapons program in months, not years. And then he also said that the hard fact is, so long as Saddam remains in power, he threatens the well-being of his people, the peace of the region, the security of the world. The best way to end that threat once and for all is with a new Iraqi government. So I'm not going to call Bush a liar and a deceiver. President Clinton said the exact same things about weapons of mass destruction that he can begin
to. Will, you're selectively using context there. And
I'm not. This was his statement in 1998, December 16th, 1998, his address
right.
to the nation.
You just made my point.
Yeah.
Sam?
Well, let me address the UN thing. I think it's fairly clear that the UN will not come out with a major sanctions program. The Russian foreign minister yesterday said what I think is going to be the dominating tension here, and that is they are afraid, the members of the Security Council are afraid, that the United States will use a sanctions package as a step towards military force. Therefore, they are stepping back from agreeing to sanctions. So the chances are we will not get a sanctions package out of the UN. There will be a sanctions coalition of the willing, some of the typical suspects, and then we'll move on to the next step.
Yeah.
But it's going to pass through the UN very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Will, thank you for your call. Will, I'm sorry I'm out of time for this segment, but I appreciate your call. We're going to take more calls in the next segment as we continue with Colonel Sam Gardner. Others will join us in the coming hours here on the Tom Hartman program, live from Camp Democracy in Washington, D.C. If you'd like to talk with us, it's toll-free, 866-440-TOM, In for Tom Hartman, I'm Peter B. Collins.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Fighting for democracy, present and future. We're live from Camp Democracy in Washington, D.C. I'm Peter B. Collins here on the Tom Hartman program. Tom will return on Monday. He is in New York again today on a book promotion tour. His brand new book is called Screwed, The Undeclared War Against the Middle Class and What We Can Do About It. It's out in hardcover. And I encourage you to support Tom's literary efforts. He's a great writer and brings a lot of historical perspective to both the radio show and the written word when he publishes. Colonel Sam Gardner is with us here, live at Camp Democracy. He's retired from the United States Air Force. And, Sam, during the break, we were talking about the political dimensions of what the president has been doing. And one of the things, again, related to Guantanamo Bay, where he essentially was chastened by the Supreme Court. He doesn't accept any chastening, but he's willing to comply, yet he wants to maintain the secret CIA prisons, perhaps for Iranian detainees of the future, and he wants to maintain the right to torture. He doesn't call it that, but he calls it enhanced interrogation. And he is sending this legislation to the Hill and demanding immediate action by Congress. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the issues related to Iran, and I've asked a number of members of the House and at least one senator about this, I say, does Bush have authorization? Is it covered under the GWAT, the 9/11 resolution, or under the Iraq resolution? And every case it comes back explicitly, no, he does not have congressional authority to do this. So do you think that he will just skate over it like he has so many on so many other issues, or do you think that he will force a confrontation both to give him the authority mm-hmm. and to force Democrats to take a position on mm-hmm. this before the midterm election?
When they tell you he doesn't have the authority, I think they miss what's happening in the strategic communications plan, which is to connect it to Al-Qaeda. If he does that, even implicitly, then the argument that he can find from lawyers who will argue the case he wants to is that the global war on terrorism authorizes him because it authorized him to go after Al-Qaeda wherever it was.
But Al-Qaeda's not in Iran.
They're saying that. There has been a leak to the LA Times that Al-Qaeda's in Iran. If you look at his speech, he makes that connection. Jerusalem Post today makes that connection. If you want that argument, you find enough out there to do it. Now, there's a separate part of the question you asked, which is, will he go to Congress? People who want the answer to be, we don't go after Iran, say he needs to go to the Congress. I've talked to some people on the Hill who make just the opposite argument. Given the Congress right now, given the Congress that's likely to exist, well, that will exist after the elections, before the change in January, mm-hmm. if he goes, he'll get approval. Particularly, and this is what's emerging in the last couple of days for the argument, if you also connect it to Israel. Iran is a threat to Israel, Iran, yeah. Hezbollah. Therefore,
that neutralizes a lot of Democrats.
A lot of Democrats won't say we're against the war mm-hmm. because Israel is threatened. So that, you know, going to the Congress is actually a way for him to get support for a strike on Iran.
Wow. We got to watch this on a daily basis, and as I've pointed out on this program and on mine, I consider this to be a very serious issue that, unfortunately, I don't think is being taken seriously enough, either by the media or by elected officials, including Democrats here in Washington. Let's go to Carletta in Pittsburgh. Hello, Carletta. You're on the Tom Hartman program with me, Peter B. and Sam Gardner.
Hi. I think that this issue of a disagreement between the military and the administration is so serious that we need maybe the American Bar Association and the Center for Defense Information and some others to have an emergency conference on this question, because you know, we have a civilian control of the military, and under ordinary circumstances, the military is to take orders from the commander-in-chief. But if the commander-in-chief is incompetent and they feel he's ordering the United States to go over a cliff, what are their moral and legal obligations at that point? And I don't think our country's been faced with this question before, and I think we need a really big conversation, a public conversation with legal scholars and military scholars to sort through this, because is it the moral obligation of the chiefs of staff, the joint chiefs of staff, to obey a commander-in-chief who orders them to drive the country over a cliff?
Okay, Sam?
Well, her point is absolutely profound. We can't have a country in which the military opposes the president. There are a couple guidelines. First of all, the military cannot, should not, will not follow illegal orders. Recall, the military pledge allegiance not to the White House,
to the Constitution.
To the Constitution.
Yeah.
So
right.
They actually, but your point, I have some friends who suggested, who's saying that we need a summit of wise people outside the government.
Right.
To talk about this, and I think that's a very interesting argument.
And the American Bar Association has really stepped up to the plate in terms of all the violations that
sure.
Bush has committed against the Constitution after he took the oath. And I think if we're not going to hold our elected officials accountable to preserving, protecting, and defending the Constitution, then let's delete that from their oath.
Let's just delete
it from the oath if we're not going to hold them.
I'm not ready to go there. I want to hold them accountable.
Let's fix it.
I want to stand on the oath. I want to stand on the Constitution.
Right, but if they can violate their oath, then it's pretty meaningless. And if it's just becoming a habit.
Well, that's what we have to fix.
But I would even argue that there are some military officers who are subject to trial because they have violated the Uniform Code of Military Justice.
Right.
And that's just as serious. I mean, just take Tommy Franks, for example. If you've read Tom Rick's book, he says in there, but Franks actually lied when he talked about some of the planning that wasn't going on. Now, Tommy Franks could refuse to answer a question, but he cannot lie. The military is the one profession that I know of where a lie is a violation of the law.
Yeah.
Right.
For an officer not to tell the truth is to violate the law.
All right. Thank you very much, Carletta. I got to jump to another call. How about John in Springfield, Mass? Hello, John. You're on the Tom Hartman program. Go right ahead. Let's see if we can pick up John's call here. And I'm waiting for my computer to tell me that he's with us. Hello, John. Are you there? Okay, Clay. John is on line 5. That's where it is on my screen, and now my connection dropped. Okay, let's see. Clay, why don't you just give me another caller and tell me who it is? I'm talking to our contact in New York City. Okay, Ron, good afternoon. You're on the Tom Hartman program. Hello, Ron.
Hi. Very interesting show. You know, I think the Iran, we deterred Soviet Union for 40 or 50 years. Iran poses absolutely zero threat to us, and they won't have any kind of weapon system for many, many years. I think the whole thing is a crock. It should be over our dead bodies as Cheney and Bush start another bloodbath. I think we're dealing, for that first caller, that Republican cult zombie, we're dealing with psychopathic liars in this White House. Everybody knows that these are flat devils. I think they're Luciferian dead enders, and I think one thing
that's
that
a new one. Luciferian dead enders.
Yeah, we need basically to shake the
foundation. Do you have that? Do you have a copyright on that?
Yeah.
That's very original. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I think in all seriousness, we need to break open the whatchamacallit, read Ephesians 6:12 to get the nature of our enemy, our internal enemy, and 2 Corinthians 10:4, and you know. They've been piling on the lies so often, starting in 91 with bayonet babies, and then wrote to aluminum tubes, you know, yellow cake, the whole rest of it. For you Republican nitwits, the propaganda is just amazing. They pose zero threat. We need
All
to...
right, sir. Thank you very much. That was an enlightening diatribe, and I appreciate it.
But go to his point. Iran is not an immediate threat.
I agree.
You know, it's 5-10 years at least. The other thing is, and Zygmunt Brzezinski says this, there's some problems it is better to put off. In another 3 or 4 years, we'll be less vulnerable in Iraq. We may have found a way to talk to these people. The whole reason to put this off, to kick it downstream. And sometimes in very difficult problems, that is the best solution.
Yeah. But Bush is really locked into a mentality that appears to prevent him from even considering that, Sam.
Well, again, I quote press sources who say that even if I'm paraphrasing, even if I'm followed by another Republican, he won't have the freedom of action I do. I've got to be the one to take care of Iran.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of messianic, isn't it? Not Luciferian, messianic.
Yeah, I think so.
Wow. Well, you know, it's fascinating. I appreciate the information you bring to us. It's also chilling. And as we move forward, Sam, I hope to continue to stay in touch with you, consult with you. And whenever you have breaking information, please bring it our way.
Will do, Peter.
All right. That's Colonel Sam Gardner, retired from the U.S. Air Force. He's with us here at Camp Democracy in Washington, D.C. We're going to take a break and return for more activity here. Coming up next hour here on the Tom Hartmann Program, we'll be joined by attorney Paul Leto. He has led the challenge to the disputed election in San Diego's California District 50. And it's a very serious situation where the Republican was declared the winner on unofficial results and was sworn in even before the election was certified. And this was a fast action move, a fast and loose move by Speaker Dennis Hastert, and it's possible they could pull one of those fast ones again. Also next hour, Clark Kissinger on the Commission on Crimes Against Humanity and Melanie Sloan from Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. It's all ahead from Camp Democracy. I'm Peter B. Collins for Tom Hartmann.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartmann.
I'm Peter B. Collins here on the Tom Hartmann Program, live from Camp Democracy in Washington, D.C. There's a lot of activity here today. Focus is on labor and also on issues related to consumers. Wake Up Walmart is a group that is fighting to make people aware of what Walmart does, and there are a lot of things you need to know about related to Walmart. Chris Kofinas joins us, communications director for Wake Up Walmart. Hello, Chris.
Hey, how are you?
Doing fine, and Camp Democracy is alive and well, and your colleague Buffy is conducting a workshop over here right now.
There you go.
Yeah. So
Buffy,
tell us about
the Walmart Slayer.
Buffy the Walmart Slayer.
Sorry, I couldn't resist.
Oh, that's nice. So tell us about some of the recent actions, because you have been working to gain the support of Democratic candidates. And did I actually hear Joe Biden went to Iowa and gave a speech campaigning against Walmart?
Yeah, it's been pretty incredible. We actually launched, we just came back, and we're slowly recovering. We launched this nationwide bus tour that started August 1st in New York City and went all the way to Seattle. And we did about 38 cities in 35 days, 19 states, about 54 events, including town halls, rallies, press conferences, you know, canvassings, to basically build this public and political awareness about the negative impact that Walmart is having on the country. And in the process, we had, we had asked political leaders from, all parts of the party and others to come out and speak. And what was amazing was the number of Democrats from literally all sides of the Democratic Party that came out and spoke. Our second day we had an event in Bridgeport, Connecticut, and we had Ned Lamont and Joe Lieberman at the same event, which is it was the only event they actually did together outside the debates. And someone quipped at the event that the war divided them, but Walmart united them. And we also, we did a 6-day tour in Iowa where it really kind of exploded in the sense of the public awareness and the number of political. We had Evan Bayh at one event. We had Joe Biden at another event. Tom Vilsack, Bill Richardson, John Edwards did an event earlier in Pittsburgh. And they've all been coming out. Literally, we had three heads of the current and the former heads of the DLC, the current and the former head of the DGA. Senate Minority Leader Harry Reid spoke at our event in Nevada. And what the message was and what we were trying to stress, and I think why it's such a powerful message, is that corporations like Walmart, which are number two in the Fortune 500, the largest private employer in America, owned by the wealthiest family in America, $11.2 billion in after-tax profits, they have a responsibility to provide affordable health care, good wages, and help protect American jobs. And what's happening again and again is they are not. They set a powerful precedent in this country, and unfortunately the negative one. And what we've tried to do since we launched the WakeUpWalmart.com campaign about a year and 4 months now, 5 months, is to build this grassroots movement. We have over 260,000 people that have joined this campaign to put pressure on this company to become a more responsible employer.
And now, Chris, let me ask you to pull back the curtain here on the political arm twisting. What did it take to get a guy like Evan Bayh to come out and make explicit criticisms of Walmart? Did you have to do focus groups in Indiana persuade him that 90% of his constituents don't like Walmart?
No, it was really amazing. It was really easy because to us, and I think, you know, when we would talk to them about it and they would ask, you know, what's the message of this thing? And we're like, you know, this isn't about destroying Walmart. This is about Walmart understanding that just like individuals, they have a responsibility to improve the lives of their workers and their families and have a positive impact in the community. And what we're asking you to do is take your position of power and influence both in the party as well as in the country and help us communicate that message to consumers, to voters, and the American people. And everyone, you know, I would say that they all got it. They understood. And I would tell you, Bayh was very eloquent and very powerful, as was Biden. You know, Vilsack was incredibly impressive. Edwards was off the charts in terms of being able to communicate this. And they were all very good in understanding what the point of this was. And what's interesting about it is as we traveled throughout the country, the most fascinating thing that, to me at least, was meeting people literally that were Republicans, that were independents, that had never voted Democrat in their life, that got this issue. And what they got was that corporations have responsibilities. And for them to make excuses as to why they can't provide affordable health care, why they can't pay a living wage, why they can't help protect American jobs, the American people across all parties aren't buying it anymore. And that's why you've seen Walmart, you know, come out and attack us for this, as well as you've seen this kind of litany of what I call the Walmart apologists come out there and basically make this strange, crazy argument that it's okay to exploit 1.3 million workers as long as it provides so-called low prices to people. That's ridiculous.
We are all paying for it through our tax dollars to support the health care of Walmart workers who don't get it from the employer. Chris Kafinas, thank you for joining us. I want to urge people to go to wakeupwalmart.com. That's wakeupwalmart.com, and you can get more information. Congratulations to you on some very effective lobbying.
Oh, thank you very much.
Joining us now is Virginia Rodino with the U.S. Labor Against the War. She's right here at Camp Democracy. Hi, Virginia.
Hi. Thanks for having me on your show.
Welcome. Tell us how much of labor is against the war.
Well, we are an anti-war coalition of about 150 members. We're state, regional, and national labor organizations, unions, that have joined together and have said we want the troops to be brought home immediately. We want them to be taken care of when they come back. We want job training for the troops when they come back. We want complete uranium testing for the troops.
That's a very important issue to me.
Return, yes. So, We stand in solidarity with workers in the United States that are being really taken advantage of because of the billions of dollars that are being spent to occupy Iraq illegally. And we're standing in solidarity with the Iraqi workers who actually, Iraq is now at about 70% unemployment.
Yeah.
And the workers aren't allowed to unionize.
So. Yeah, the legacy of Paul Bremer.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So they're being brought back to Saddam era. Status as workers, the union leaders are working underground, they're being attacked, they're being assassinated,
And Virginia, is there a website that people can go to get more information?
There is. It's uslaboragainstwar.org.
uslaboragainstwar.org.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for joining
us.
Thanks for being here at Camp Democracy.
Thank you.
Coming up next, lots more as we continue from Camp Democracy in Washington, D.C. Live on the Tom Hartman Program, I'm Peter B. Collins.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman. It's the Tom Hartman Program, live from Camp Democracy in the nation's capital. I'm Peter B. Collins, sitting in for Tom today. It's a beautiful, muggy afternoon here on the National Mall in Washington, about 83, 85 degrees, and that D.C. humidity is not up in the red zone, but it's probably in the 80% range. And people are congregating here in ever larger numbers at Camp Democracy. You can find out more at campdemocracy.org, and I am being very direct. I want you to make plans to come here. You have until September 21st. There'll be activities here every day. You could come out for a weekend, but it's important to lend your voice and your presence to the messages that are being sent from here, just a couple of blocks up to the White House. Joining us now is Paul Lato. He is an attorney who fights for election integrity and the protection of our right to vote and the right to have that vote properly counted. Paul Lato, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program today.
Thank you, Peter.
Nice to talk with you again. And for listeners who may not know the background, on June 6, California held its primary and at the same time a special election in District 50 in San Diego to select the successor to Randy Duke Cunningham, who is currently an inmate in a federal penitentiary. And as a result, there was a race between Francine Busby and Brian Bilbray. The day after the election, only 4,700 votes separated them, and Bilbray was in the lead. And before the election could be certified, Mr. Bilbray was sworn in by Speaker Hastert just up the street from us here in Washington, D.C. That took place a full 16 days before the election was actually certified. This, in my view, is an extra-legal end run on the process. And, Paul, you went to court in San Diego to try to challenge some of the issues related to this special election, the custody of electronic voting machines, the way the votes were tabulated, and you were seeking a full hand count of the votes in that congressional race. And the Superior Court judge ruled against you. Describe that ruling and the basis that the judge cited.
Well, the swearing-in took place on June 13th, only 7 days after the election, and when at least 12,500 votes were still uncounted by the admission of the Registrar of Voters, it may have been 30,000 or more. And that's when, at that point, the defendants argued in their briefs that exclusive jurisdiction, quote-unquote, transferred to the House of Representatives, which they argued meant that no court or anybody had any power to do anything with regard to the election because the Speaker of the House had essentially made his selection. And, in fact, the North County Times even quoted the judges saying, quote, once the House selects its candidate, the court no longer has jurisdiction. So, you know, I love Tom Hartman's intro of the values of democracy upon which this country was founded, but here, you know, democracy was terminated because the Speaker of the House decided to swear somebody in.
Well, and Paul, I guess I'm guilty of trying to think rationally here, and I'm not trained in the vagaries of the law, but it seems to me that if the election itself is tainted or questionable, then you can't go forward with the swearing in of a candidate as a result of a questionable election. Isn't that simple?
Yeah, and even a premature swearing-in should be invalid. And we told the judge that the real issue was the invalidity of the swearing-in. You know, if it was the middle of an undisputed congressperson's term, that would be another thing. You know, a court wouldn't be allowed to interfere in that. But here, the very validity of the swearing-in is exactly what's at issue, and that's precisely the kinds of things that courts review. If that weren't the case, the House could do absolutely anything it wanted, and no court could ever tell them to do anything because it would be within their exclusive power concerning their members.
Now, you've had a little time to review this Superior Court judge's ruling from California. Do you see a recourse through appeal?
Yeah, we're going to be filing an appeal probably today. It could be early next week. We may well be filed today. And it'll be, you know, none too soon because this is already spreading across the country. They use the same argument in a Republican primary in the state of Nevada for Congress in order to favor or, you know, uphold the victory by 400 some odd votes of Secretary of State Dean Heller. You know, who brought in Sequoia into Nevada. So he's able to win his congressional primary even. And now when they apply that to I can't wait till they apply that to a Democratic primary.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think are the prospects of the appeal? Do you think that there is a precedent that will give you traction?
Yeah, there are various precedents. There's a 1972 U.S. Supreme Court case that says because states have jurisdiction to do the counts, they have jurisdiction to do the recounts. And that's what everybody would expect before the election. So they can't change the rules after the election by swearing somebody in and saying, oh, well, now you don't have recount rights anymore. That would actually violate the section of the Constitution that comes right before Article 1, Section 5 that they're citing. It's Article 1, Section 4. It says states are responsible for setting the rules regarding the time, place, and manner of elections. So they should, you know, that would include the ability to police those elections as well.
Mm-hmm. And are you getting any additional support or even moral support from the Democratic Party?
Well, the Democratic Party has called for a hand recount. They did so on July 14th. So they have done that. We're looking for more support than what we've gotten. There hasn't been, you know, other than the moral support, that's been about it.
Mm-hmm. And Paul Leto, you joined me on my West Coast radio program last week when Francine Busby agreed to be interviewed for the first time. We've been inviting her since June. And you were very diplomatic, perhaps more than I, but I was frankly disappointed that she doesn't have more of a sense of fight and that she, more importantly, doesn't appear to see the risk. She seemed to be playing down a fight over the June election, hoping to prevail this November. And the point I made is that given the tactics that they used to, quote-unquote, defeat her in this special election, how the hell does she think that she can overcome those tactics in November?
Well, I think the more attention that we bring to the election process, the harder it is going to be for them to use the same tactics in November. But I think the problem with a special election with a short term is it's sort of free for the stealing, if you want to put it that way, because by the time you get into court and go through the appeals and stuff like that, it's very, very likely that they'll be able to run out the clock. It's exactly the same kind of thing that happens in presidential races. They run out the clock.
Yeah. Let's take a caller here. Dave in Eureka, join us here on the Tom Hartman program. Go ahead, Dave.
I do believe that cheating in elections is now a Republican way of life, but in that 50th congressional district, to my knowledge, they still have not counted the absentee ballots. If they've done, they've done it in secret, and they're not giving out the results. And to me, this is just one atrocity on top of another in this election fraud. Do you know, is there any way that we could validate what the absentee ballots came out to say?
Well, they are claiming that they've counted them now, but they piled them all into huge precincts that were just for absentee ballots instead of putting each absentee ballot into its proper precinct. One of the things that does is it makes it impossible to reconcile, you know, votes with voters to see whether there's been ballot box stuffing. So they are saying that they've counted them and that, you know, at this point the results are certified, but they reported it in such a way that it makes it untraceable.
Sounds like Francine Busby is gambling that the Republicans are going to turn honest between now and November.
Very well put, Dave. Thank you very much. Paul Leto, if we take this one case and extend it, aren't there prospects that local jurisdictions might fumble an election in a way that, say, Republican leaders could do the same thing with other candidates who have not been certified, but swear them in before the election results are finalized, and then essentially just say, sorry, you can't do anything about it?
Yeah, that's exactly what could happen based on the arguments brought forward by the defendants that were then adopted by the judge. There's no limit to that power, so they could even swear somebody in without an election. Our argument, the strength of our argument is to say, look, there has to be a line. You can't just swear in somebody without election. The Constitution says there must be elections by the people every 2 years. What does by the people mean? You know, so there has to be, you know, a line somewhere. The question is, where is the line? And the answer to that has got to be you have to finish counting the votes and you have to certify the election, especially when it's disputed.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you for your hard work on this case. I think it has signal importance, and I hope that people all across America will focus on California District 50. We do need to keep the heat on there because I am concerned about use of similar tactics in November. And I think we all have to be vigilant on that. Paul Lehto, L-E-H-T-O, thank you for your work and thanks for joining us today.
Right. VelvetRevolution.us, you can get more info.
That is correct, and you can also help support the efforts financially. That's I'm glad you raised that, VelvetRevolution.us. And Velvet Revolution is also one of the co-sponsors of Camp Democracy here in Washington, D.C. I'm Peter B. here on the Tom Hartman Program. Thanks again, Paul. We'll talk to you soon. And coming up in our next segment, we're going to be joined by Clark Kissinger. He is one of the participants in the Commission on Crimes Against Humanity. Also, later this hour, live from Camp Democracy here in Washington, Melanie Sloan with an update on the Joe Wilson, Valerie Plame, Karl Rove CIA leak case. And I don't believe that it was all Armitage. I'm Peter B. Collins, sitting in for Tom Hartman.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Tom Hartman is the hardest working man in progressive talk radio, and today he's not on the air, but he's working. He's promoting his new book, Screwed, The Undeclared War Against the Middle Class and What We Can Do About It. And Tom will return to the air on Monday as usual. I'm Peter B. Collins. I'm delighted to be sitting in for Tom. And I am also delighted to be here at Camp Democracy in Washington, D.C. As we've described for you, we're just under the Washington Monument, about three blocks from the White House. It's about a 15-minute walk down the mall to the Capitol building, and lots of people are gathering here in increasing numbers. But I want to see thousands and thousands. I want to see hordes of people descend on Washington from every point of light. Do you remember the thousand points of light? Well, you're one of them, and we need to see you here in Washington to express your feelings about this administration, about the war in Iraq, about, as you heard with Colonel Sam Gardner last hour, the prospect of a military attack on Iran, which could produce a conflagration that might spin way out of control. I don't know about you, but I have no confidence in this administration and in their ability to read reality. And so I think it's more important than ever to lend your voice and lend your presence to the action here in Washington through the 21st of September. And you can get full information on the web at campdemocracy.org. Clark Kissinger joins us from New York now. In April of 1965, he helped organize the first March on Washington against the Vietnam War. And I have many colleagues who participated in that. I'm happy to say I was a little too young. My mom wouldn't let me come. More recently, he's been the initiator of the Not in Our Name statement. And I am very pleased that he and others have convened the Commission of Inquiry on Crimes Against Humanity committed by the Bush administration. Clark Kissinger, welcome to the program today.
Thank you, Peter. I wish I could be there with you today at Camp Democracy, but we are going to be down there on Wednesday the 13th because that's the day that we released the verdict that the Commission has been working on for a year now. We'll be holding a press conference at 11 in the morning at Camp Democracy, and then we'll be walking from Camp Democracy directly over to the White House to deliver the verdict to the president himself.
Oh, that's fabulous. I'm really pleased with the work that you've been doing. And my insight into it, Clark, comes from frequent conversations with Professor Marjorie Cohn. She
Yes.
teaches constitutional law at the Thomas Jefferson School in San Diego and is a great progressive commentator. And I know she made one of the presentations before this commission in January.
Yeah, she actually was one of the prosecutors, and she presented the evidence and cross-examined General Janice Karpinski, who had been the commander of all the prison facilities in Iraq. And, of course, she is now incredibly critical of what happened there. The Abu Ghraib prison was taken away from her and turned over to military intelligence, and then we know what happened from all these photographs that came out. But the thing that she was able to bring out in her testimony is the direct link between Rumsfeld and the torture programs that were carried out in Iraq and elsewhere, because she'd actually seen the memos where Rumsfeld authorized these things. So this is the type of evidence that came into our commission hearings and is being synthesized in a verdict that actually takes up five different areas of the Bush administration's program.
And briefly tick those off for us. I imagine one is illegal detention at Guantanamo.
Absolutely. One of them is illegal detention and torture. And, of course, it's not just at Guantanamo. The president has finally fessed up the other day to the secret detention facilities all over the world, which is in total contravention of the Geneva Accords. He's been carrying out an illegal program for a long period of time. And these are war crimes. You can't just disappear people and take them off to strange locations and torture them. Yet this is what this administration has done. The second indictment dealt with wars of aggression, because this administration has arrogated to itself the right to invade any country, any time, on any pretext, depose any leader. All of this, again, is in contravention of all of the accepted norms of international law. The third one deals with what this administration has done with, really not done with regard to global warming. They've suppressed the basic science on it and at the same time engaged in policies that exacerbate the problem to the point now where whole sections of the world's population are actually threatened with being flooded out. People in the Hamptons, you know, can move their house back from the beach a little bit, but where are the people in Bangladesh going to go, you know, who live in a vast river delta that's 1 or 2 feet above sea level? The fourth.
Now, Clark, yes. we're tight for time, so we can't tick off all the rest of them. Is there a website where people can read the indictment?
Yes, they absolutely can, and that's at www.bushcommission.org.
Bushcommission.org. And we have about a minute remaining. Can you tell me your reaction to the incredible comments the president has made in the past week and his demand that Congress basically legalize the illegal surveillance of American citizens that has been underway for 3 years now?
Right. Well, this isn't the first time he's done it. We keep going through this little dance where his crimes are revealed, and then the Democrats say, oh, we are outraged that we were not consulted. But if we had been consulted, we would have granted permission, and in fact, we would have administered it better. And then Congress comes together and authorizes these things. And unless there is a mass turnout of people against these policies, this is going to go on and on and on. So I encourage people to come to Camp Democracy. I encourage people to turn out on the National Day of Resistance on October 5.
Thank you very much, Clark Kissinger, and we look forward to having you here next week as you bring the indictment and deliver it to the doorstep at the White House. That's Clark Kissinger in New York. I'm Peter B. Collins in Washington, D.C. We're going to take your calls in the next segment. Join us at 866-440-TOM.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And the Tom Hartman Program continues live from Camp Democracy in Washington, D.C. I am your humble substitute host, Peter B. Collins, pleased to sit in for Tom today. And the Camp Democracy is thriving and growing. I see more and more people approaching every day. And we want you to become a part of this action, this movement. Make plans to come to Washington, D.C., between now and September 21st, there are events every day, and you can get the details at campdemocracy.org. I want to thank some of the folks who've been hanging on hold. It looks like David in Bainbridge Island, Washington, has been there for over an hour. Sorry, David, and welcome to the program. What's on your mind today?
Thank you, Peter. In reference to the last call about San Diego and the voter fraud, the Democrats have to overcome this, plus voting machines, which are questionable. And so we have to get every vote we can. And the Green Party candidates are taking votes away from the Democratic Party.
You got to prove that to me.
Rick's okay in Florida. Jeb Bush and Kamala Harris disenfranchised 70,000 Democratic votes. This is what
right,
Tom
that's Catherine
Hartman,
Harris from the Party of God. Yeah, go ahead.
Tom Hartman told me. And yet there were 85,000 Green Party voters in Florida on the Bush election in 2000, and two out of three, 58,000, when they were polled coming out, said if they had to choose between Gore or Bush, they would have chosen Gore. So,
well,
Bush,
listen, if you want to point a finger at Ralph Nader, I think that he does shoulder part of the blame for Florida.
Yeah.
But the bigger blame goes to the Democratic Party, which did not demand that every vote be counted. And they gave up early, and they they permitted a Republican power play that brought us the first 4 years of this lousy Bush administration.
My point
to you would be that we need the Green Party, and we need the Green Party to win 5 to 10 seats in Congress. If they did, that would be a progressive bloc that could be the swing vote on a number of issues and neutralize some of the extremes of the Republicans and some of the corporate leanings of the Democrats.
That's the best
role the Greens could play. Go ahead.
Rick Santorum was on the the other day on television, Chris Matthews' show, and Matthews asked him about the Green Party, and he laughingly said, yes, we are supporting the Green Party. I have sent two of my campaign workers to the Green Party.
I've seen plays like that before. Listen, David, I don't think the voters of Pennsylvania are going to be diverted by the Green Party efforts of Rick Santorum. They've been widely exposed, and I don't think it's going to gain any traction. And again, yes, you know, the Greens are occasionally spoilers, but we have to look at the way the Democratic Party has taken progressives for granted in election after election. And one of the ways to try to reduce that is to support Greens where it's appropriate. Thanks for your call today, David. I got
to
wrap up. I'm sorry, David. Thank you for your call. Now let's go to Cliff in Seattle. Hello, Cliff. Cliff, you're on the Tom Hartman program.
Thanks very much, Peter. You're doing a great job today. And I want to call your attention to piece of reporting that's been on the air on the Joe Scarborough show a couple nights ago, and then last night on Keith Olbermann, and it's Lisa Meyer's report about a system developed by the Israelis that is almost 98% effective in preventing RPGs from destroying armored vehicles. The Israelis have it. It could be utilized right now by the U.S. Army in Afghanistan and Iraq to protect our troops, but a spokesman from the Pentagon in this report said that the U.S. Army will not use it or buy it from the Israelis because they have an agreement going on with the Raytheon Corporation that is trying to develop the very same kind of system, but that won't be ready for another 5 years in research and development. And I think this is utterly outrageous. If we can protect our troops right now with a system that's already in existence, and the Pentagon is saying, sorry, we can't use it because we already are trying to develop it through Raytheon. Who owns the Raytheon Corporation anyway, and how can this sort of thing happen?
I believe Raytheon's a publicly traded company. I don't think they're part of Lockheed Martin, Douglas, Boeing. I think it's still freestanding, but I am not an expert on Raytheon.
Well, don't you think this is a disturbing? I mean, this is just.
I find it very disturbing, and I will look into it further, Cliff. I haven't seen the report that you're referring to, but I will follow up on that and get more information. So, thanks for bringing it to our attention. I really appreciate your call today. Joining me now here at Camp Democracy is Brooks Sunkett. He is Vice President for Public and Healthcare Workers at CWA, the Communications Workers of America, a sister union of mine under the AFL-CIO. I'm a proud member of AFTRA, the union that represents broadcasters and actors on television and in commercials. Brooks, welcome to our program today.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Go ahead and lean right into that microphone. There are people all over the country straining to hear what you're saying.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here today.
Uh-huh. Now, you're a Vietnam vet, am I correct?
That is correct.
Yeah. What is your feeling about the war in Iraq?
Well, I think it's totally wrong. I was opposed to it before the troops even went over there. I'm even more opposed to it now.
Mm-hmm.
Soldiers are being killed. Iraqi innocent civilians are being killed. And it just makes... I mean, we've been isolated in the country, in the world.
Are labor unions putting pressure on the Democratic Party to reflect the view that you just offered?
Yes, many of us are. And I won't say in totality that all the labor is, but most of us are.
Uh-huh.
We feel very strongly opposed to the war. And we think the war is hurting our members and hurting working families all over this country.
Mm-hmm. And do you feel you're connecting with elected leaders who have a history of long support for labor issues? Or do they kind of say, gosh, you know, we're with you on health care and we're with you on minimum wage increase, but gosh, that's a foreign policy issue and, you know, we're not interested in that?
Well, we're not where we want to be with the Democratic Party, but we're making progress every day.
Uh-huh.
And I think we'll make even more progress as the elections draw near for Congress this year.
Yeah. Now, do you have any races that you're focused on that you think offer some real promise for Democratic gains this fall?
I wouldn't want to comment on that at this point.
Uh-huh. No specifics. But in general, do you see that there's a crop of fresh faces here who can help some Republicans retire and return control of the House to Democratic leadership?
Yeah, there are a couple of races. I mean, up in New York and a few probably in New England states.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And I really feel that the issues of pensions and health care are very important, and we've just seen another airline has been given permission to walk away from its pension obligations to its employees. Where are we in the battle for single-payer universal health care coverage and an honest pension system so that if you work for 30 years, a company can't tell you, oh, never mind, we decided not to pay you the pension that was part of your package for 30 years.
Well, regarding to the health care issue, I think the only way we're going to get universal health care in this country is do it state by state. I think the politics in Washington, either Democrats or Republican, is just not there. We've gotten a lot of lip service from both parties. And I think the way we win that is by state.
Yeah.
There have been some real crucial battles in various states. There's some potential in New Mexico, New Hampshire, in Illinois. And I think we also have some potential in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm. And Brooks, what are the top agenda issues for the communications workers right now?
Well, right now, we just got finished going through a reorganization. Privatization is a big thing. Pension reform is a big thing. You mentioned pensions. I'm from the public sector part of CWA, and right now our pension historically has not been a target, but it currently is a target.
Mm-hmm.
And all over the country, public sector pensions are under attack.
Yeah.
In Texas, New Jersey, California, Missouri. So that's one of our major priorities in CWA.
Yeah. Well, I think it's really important. I'm not willing to accept that fully paid employer benefits for health and pension are a thing of the past. And in the public sector, that's where we're holding on to those benefits more so than in the private sector. And we need to fight to retain what we have and regain what we've lost.
Yeah, unfortunately, in the last 20 years in the private sector, we went from where 80% of the people were protected by a defined pension plan down to about 30% of working people in this country.
Yeah, and we're not all going to win the lottery.
No, absolutely not.
Well, Brooks, I want to thank you for your participation here at Camp Democracy. It's great to meet you.
You too. Thanks
for coming on the program today. From the Communications Workers of America, Brooks Sunkett. And let's go to Armin in Bradenton, Florida. Thanks for holding on, Armin. You're on the Tom Hartman program.
Thank you very much. I want to tell everybody out there that there's a petition. If you go to moveon.org, and it's going to go to the CEO of Disney to try to stop this distorted piece that appears, in my opinion, to be a payoff to the Bush crime family about 9/11.
Right, because it was all Clinton's fault, and Sandy Berger, wouldn't give the order to attack Osama bin Laden. Yes, there is a lot of fiction in the docudrama. ABC says that they are still working on editing it, and it'll be interesting to see what scenes they trim. But I agree with you. I would love to see them pull it. They could broadcast it at a later date. Or if you remember, when people objected to a Reagan documentary, CBS buried it on a cable channel. I'd like to see this one buried somewhere, too. So thank you for bringing that forward. MoveOn.org is where people can agitate against ABC Television's misguided docudrama on 9/11. Thank you, Armin. We're going to continue in just a moment live from Camp Democracy in Washington, D.C., and Janet Bates is going to favor us with a tune. Next on the Tom Hartman program, I'm Peter B. Collins.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Tag, you're in.
All right, I'm it. I'm Tom Hartman today. I'm Peter B. Collins sitting in for Tom here on the Tom Hartman program. You can call in toll-free 866-440-TOM, 866-440-8466. I want to give a shout-out to Clay at Air America in New York and Lauren, who have been working to keep up with me. This is a show that is changing every break, and they've been really great troopers. I also have to give kudos to David Swanson and the entire crew here at Camp Democracy. They've done a fabulous job creating the playing field, and now you must come. You must come to Washington, D.C. and become a part of this growing posse holding accountable the Bush administration. And you can do it between now and the 21st of September. Log on to campdemocracy.org to get full information. And one other person that I want to single out at the expense of others is Linda Weiner, because she is responsible for our ability to broadcast here from Camp Democracy today, and it took her about 79 phone calls to Verizon to get the hookup squared away here, and I really appreciate her her stalwart dedication to that. Joining us now is Janet Bates, who hails from Bandon, Oregon, and has appeared on the Tom Hartman program before. Hello, Janet.
Hello.
Lean right in there and say hi to everybody.
Hello.
And now tell us about this hotbed of activism in Bandon.
Oh, well, we started off, before the war, we started having rallies there, a group of people. But then about two summers ago, we started attending Women in Black in Coos Bay. And then we decided there was more of us than there were of them. So we started our own in Bandon,
uh-huh.
Women in Black. And we had a group of maybe 10 or 15 people standing out. And then last fall, a group of flag wavers or whatever decided they were going to oppose us. And so they started a very strong group across from us with flags and, you know, we support the troops and peace, not pact, passivism and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so then our group just grew. It grew and grew. And then we branched off, and now we have Veterans for Peace group on another corner.
Right.
And then I stand on yet another corner. So we have quite a display every Friday, and there's usually more flags on the other side than there are people.
Yeah.
But so there's, you know, usually about 50 or 60 people out every Friday in Bandon.
Now, I noticed as you approached Camp Democracy today that you were armed with this guitar. And the security people frisked you and made sure that,
it
you know...
It wasn't a banjo.
Well, and that you didn't... That's a good one. That you didn't have any dangerous gels or liquids, you know, or toothpaste that might be a risk to us here. So what are you going to play for us?
Well, I'm going to play a song called A Prisoner of Conscience. I wrote this a few years ago when there were six American soldiers in Canada seeking refugee status there.
Mm-hmm.
Mother Jones did a great article on it. They interviewed each of them. And then I just finished it recently with the Aaron Watata and the information about them. And so I just recorded it on a CD.
All right. Here comes Janet Bates performing live here at Camp Democracy with our very low-tech broadcast system. Go right ahead.
I will stand up and be counted for the things that I believe. I will not let my fear of retribution affect me. I can no longer walk the narrow path that I am on. I fear one day I'll find that my humanity is gone. From the air, aristocracy, a call throughout the land. A call to arm their stations, their positions to defend. They are making you believe it's for the benefit of all. I really wouldn't trust them, after all. I would fight a war of justice. I would fight a war to free. Who are in bondage, I would grant them amnesty. I would fight for independence should it be taken from me. I will not defend the interests of the aristocracy. It is a situation either way, and I will lose. I will betray my country if I do what I plan to. I still have my conscience, and I believe in what I do. And both would be betrayed should I do what they want me to. Those people they are killing never were a threat to me. And they never were a threat to anyone that I can see. I would fight for independence should it be taken from me.
That's Janet Bates. We don't have time to listen to the entire rest of the song, but it's very powerful stuff. And thank you, Janet, for joining us here today. Quickly, Joe Hatcher from the Iraq Veterans Against the War wants to announce some actions you're taking, Joe.
That's correct. To first start out, Saturday, we're going to have an after-hours open mic poetry slam on the corner of 15th and Constitution on the northwest, where Camp Democracy is currently located. Sunday... we're going to have the 10 a.m. open house at the Pentagon. The march is going to start. VFP organized march is going to start at 9 a.m. from 1st Street and Independence in the southwest. From there, we're going to be getting on at Capital South Metro and exiting at the Pentagon for their open house.
All right, I got to stop you there. Those sirens are not for you, but, Joe, I appreciate your activism. And people can go to IVAW.org to get more information. This is Peter B. Collins. It's been a thrill to sit in for Tom Hartman and broadcast live from Camp Democracy. Visit campdemocracy.org and come on down to Washington, D.C. before September 21st. This is Peter B. Thanks for listening. You can visit my website, peterbcollins.com.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.